Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, we'll all be giving pickling a go after that, but Kevin doesn't need to. Kevin's been in touch to say, nothing better than a radish sandwich. Thinly sliced radishes on white bread and some Irish butter. Kevin, I can't go there with you. I'm sorry. I'm just not a fan of the radish. Like, I do think that you have to do something to a radish or throw it into a salad, like get some flavour in there in some way. That's why Agnes's suggestion to pickle them is really attractive to me. But listen, eat your radish sandwich and enjoy it. But I'm not going to join you on that one. 51551 for your text. Now, a court in Hong Kong this morning has ruled that two newspaper editors of a publication called Stand News are guilty of a crime against national security. And that case has been seen as an important test of the limits of press freedom in Hong Kong. From there, we're joined by Dennis Staunton, Irish Times China correspondent. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us. I know you were there, weren't you, for the verdict today, and the charges centred around sedition, publishing extremist and anti-government material. So tell us a little bit more about the case before we come to the implications of it.
Well, the case really was these two journalists. They were former editors of this newspaper, Stand News, which was it was an online paper, and it had a very good reputation in Hong Kong. It was it was generally regarded as having very high standards in terms of its accuracy and its fairness. And even people who tended to be pro-government, they often praised the way it was run. But after the crackdown in 2019 and 2020, when Beijing imposed a national security law, what happened then was that you had a crackdown on all political dissent and also on the press. And so, first of all, they closed Apple Daily, which was owned by Jimmy Lai, who's also on trial for separate offences or charges. And then they closed, they went into Stan News and they raided it and they arrested a number of people. And they charged these two editors. And basically, it was about the publication of a number of articles. Some of these were interviews with democracy activists. Others were blog posts, like sort of opinion pieces. And what the defense were saying was that this is just normal journalism. It's basically just, the fact that you allow people to express their views doesn't mean either that you endorse those views or that you're not platforming any other views. But what the court ruled today was that it didn't have to be an incitement to violence to be sedition. It didn't even have to be a threat to national security itself. The very fact that these articles had the intention of undermining the authority of the government in Hong Kong and of Beijing and of the relationship between the two, that itself was seditious and that was effectively a threat to national security.
And this case,
and that was enough.
This case has been seen, and the case against Jimmy Lai too, as representative of the changing face of life in Hong Kong, hasn't it?
Yeah, what's happened is that you've had, these encroachments, as each month has passed almost since 2020, you've had, the space of freedom in Hong Kong has been getting more and more limited. And at each stage, Hong Kong has an independent judiciary and it has a common law system like we have in Ireland. And so it's got, it operates differently to the way mainland China operates. And a lot of the time people have been hoping that the courts might stand in the way of some of this march towards basically reducing freedoms. What seems to be happening in almost every case is that the judges tend to side with the government, with the authorities. And this case is particularly important because basically it's saying that that there is no place in Hong Kong for platforming views which are hostile to the current order here, and so that's going to have a chilling effect. I mean, already most independent media have been snuffed out. You've got some small online publications that do good work, but very very carefully, and they avoid criticizing the government. But it's going to chill the atmosphere, that bit further, I think.
Mm-hmm. And just going back, I know you touched on this, but people will remember just before COVID, we had the unrest in Hong Kong and we heard about it in the media here in great detail, and we saw the pictures as well. And there were protests over these plans to allow extraditions to mainland China. What has happened to the movement against those plans? Where has that gone? Because, of course, COVID came in then and with new laws introduced. But where is that at?
It's crushed. It's gone. And there's no organized political opposition. Now, the fact is that at least half the population of Hong Kong was in favor of these protesters. And on one of the protests, 2 million people came onto the streets. And that's out of a population of 7.5 million. So they were hugely popular. But the fact is that you just can't, you can't go and hold up a poster in the middle of the street here saying something critical of the government. And that's just not going to be allowed to happen. And so all of that's gone. The democracy movement is gone, so that they had elections and they wouldn't allow anybody from any of the opposition movements to stand. They decided they were ineligible. So all of that is gone. But the people, of course, have not gone. And the people continue to hold their views. And there are still, at this court case today, there were a lot of people there, and it was interesting who they were. Some of them were former journalists from this newspaper, others older democracy activists, but a lot of young people. And some of these were young journalism students, as well as young people working for these small online outfits. And so there is still a kind of a spirit of freedom which exists here in Hong Kong. And also, I think a lot of people here, if you talk to them, they still think that there's something to play for, because although it's much less free than it used to be, it's still much more free than it is in Beijing. So, for example, here I can speak to you on the internet. I can look up the Financial Times or whatever. I can walk down the street and buy a copy of the New York Times or the Economist. I can't do that in Beijing. Mm-hmm. Justice is conducted in public here. It's conducted in secret in China for the most part. And so, there's still a lot worth fighting for.
Yeah, and there are a lot of contradictions as well, not least due to the fact that Hong Kong is such a big financial sector. So for Beijing, they want to obviously maintain that. But how do they balance that with their desire to control the narrative?
Yeah, that's very difficult, because part of the reason that Hong Kong can function, it's the biggest financial services centre in the world after New York and London. And one of the reasons it can function is because it is seen to be autonomous from Beijing. And so that means the rule of law, they have an independent central bank, their own currency, all of this stuff. Now, if the outside world starts to perceive Hong Kong as not really being properly autonomous, that could kill the golden goose. And already Hong Kong is suffering because people don't want to live here. They don't want to come here in the numbers that they used to. So a lot of businesses and banks and other operations have moved to Singapore. And so Beijing has a very delicate balancing act. And again, one of the hopes had been that after they had sort of sent their message and made their point with regard to national security, they might ease up. But there are a few signs of it. There was one glimmer of hope today, though, and it's in a different court case. And this was a case which was tried by a jury. And the jury acquitted 6 people who were charged with terrorist offences. And these were pro-democracy protesters, and they had been accused of plotting to kill police. And so they were acquitted today. So that was a very unusual moment. There was a man sitting beside me who, as the news was coming in, we were waiting for the trial to begin today. And the guy said to me, "Give me a hug. This has just happened." He was so happy. And because it's so rare that anybody gets acquitted now.
Right. And the relief from him was very obvious to you, given what he said to you. And just going back to the importance of Hong Kong, Dennis, as a big financial centre, because China's economy has been flat, I mean, worse than flat, according to different analysis that you would read. So how important is Hong Kong to China in that regard?
Well, what Hong Kong does for China is that basically it's like China can plug itself into the international financial system. And so China has obviously a big economy and it has its own financial sector. But China likes to keep its economy and its financial system semi-closed. So, for example, there are capital controls. You can only take a certain amount of money out of the country. And so having Hong Kong adjacent to it means that it has the advantages of being part of the international financial system without all of the responsibilities of being part of it. And so, basically China needs all the help it can get at the moment because, as you say, the economy is flat. Part of the reason for that is that there's been this housing collapse in the property market. Chinese people buy property at a higher rate than in Ireland. The home ownership rate is something like 90% compared to about 70% in Ireland. And so all people's savings go into that. So if the value of that asset goes down, consumer confidence goes down. So there's general flatness. And the way in which China has been trying to work its way out of it is manufacturing. And they do this very successfully. They do it very efficiently. And they've moved up the value chain. So as you can see with things like electric vehicles, they do them not just cheaper, but better than anybody else. But the trouble is, there aren't enough people willing to buy them in China. So they're trying to export them. And now the rest of the world is saying, well, hold on, we can't afford to start taking all of your cheap and high quality goods because it's going to wreck our own industry. And so they're coming up against limits abroad. So that China needs to have a very sort of placid and functioning international trading system. It needs no external shocks, and it needs things like the access to the financial markets that Hong Kong gives it.
Dennis, thank you very much for joining us from Hong Kong. Dennis Staunton there, who is Irish Times China correspondent. Now, we're going to meet a new author, but someone who will be no stranger to viewers of Nationwide. It's Zainab Boladale, who's going to be here to talk about her debut novel.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.